Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, Madman Machine Show 138 for early December 2008. Welcome to the show. I want to kick off the show this time with a little Christmas music. This from Jimmy Bratcher. He calls it Bell Carol Blue. Get us all in the holiday spirit. And coming up after the song, I'll answer the question, where did the wealth go?
Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw care away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and bold. One seemed to hear words of the cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pound, raising the sound. Oh, you and Dale telling a tale. Merrily ringing, wild people singing songs of cheer. Christmas is here. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
The Mad Money Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com, helping investors succeed by matching people like you with portfolios. Sign up for an account with them today. Well, I really want to get into this topic of where did the wealth go, but first I got to tell you a little bit of odds and ends that are going around here. Let's see. First of all, I mentioned a couple of shows ago about this cashback offer on eBay. Well, I went out and bought a gold coin or two off of eBay using the cashback program. And sure enough, Live.com says they've credited me with $200 for each of the gold coins I bought. One of them credited me right away. So I think the seller was somehow credited with a Live.com cashback program. And the other one, they say they're going to pay me in 60 days, I think it is. So sometime in January, my PayPal account will get credited with the other $200. But I look at these two gold coins, two Krugerrands, and they look different from each other. One is very highly polished and doesn't have a hole. The detail is not so clear on it. The other one is kind of dull, but with clearer detail. And one's from 72, one's from 1980. And I'm thinking, how can two coins be so different looking? One of them's got to be a fake. You know, I figured I'm the guy that bought the fake gold coin off of eBay. You know, if there's anybody in the world that buys the fake gold coin, it's me. So I looked around to try to figure out how can you tell a fake, and looked into it. There's actually this piece of plastic called the Fisher Gold Coin Tester. And it's the simplest possible thing it can be. It's a lever. It has a fulcrum on it. It has a it's a picture of a black strip of plastic with a fulcrum on the bottom. At one side of the fulcrum is a round indentation the size of a gold coin that you put your coin in. The other side is just more plastic for weight. And if you set it on the table, it's going to be tilted down toward that weighted side with the empty hole there. There's a slot also that you can put the coin in to make sure it is smaller than that hole. The idea being that gold is one of the densest metals other than platinum and tungsten. But if you find a fake gold coin out of platinum, congratulations, it's worth more than gold. And they say you can't really make a good fake gold coin out of tungsten. The other, you know, so lead is lighter, and all these other metals that might go into a alloy would make the coin lighter. So the idea is you put the coin in that recessed hole, and it should tip downward onto the side of the gold coin. And so I bought one of these on eBay too. Now the thing about that is if you bought it retail, they want to charge $140 for these five pieces of plastic, five for the different sizes of gold coins, gold Krugerrands that there are. And but I got it on eBay, found it for $77. I figure maybe I could use it once and then sell it back on eBay. You know, right, get my money back for it at least. Or even a small premium that I might have to pay for it. But so I bought that, and my coins test out positive. They both of them, even though they look different, they appear to be real gold coins. So at least I've paid for a little bit of happiness there. I don't have to worry forever thinking that these coins I bought are fake. We went to a Maryland college soccer game last weekend. Maryland played California in the NCAA college tournament that's going on right now. And coming up this weekend, you're going to have, the round of eight, I believe. They're down to the round of eight. And Maryland's going to be playing Creighton from Nebraska, I think it is. Hopefully Maryland will come through, the hometown team. We went to see the game last weekend. It was a great game. And you can believe that there's a lot of spirit, a lot of desire to win on the part of the collegiate players in Maryland. Now, I mentioned a couple shows ago that we'd be going to, I'll get a chance to go to a Steak and Shake for Christmas. Well, those plans have changed. We're not going to Huntington, the fattest city in the United States. After all, we'll be staying at home in good old Virginia and spending time with the other side of the family. Unfortunately, we don't have a Steak and Shake here. One of the things I do have, though, is gooutToEat.com. That's gooutToEat.com. And I don't know, maybe this is just restaurants in my local area, but we are happy to see that Percival's Main Street Wings is one of the restaurants that has a coupon at gooutToEat.com. And you know what I did? One time, there was this sign in their window that says, you know, check out their gooutToeat.com website. Well, I had my iPhone with me, and I looked up Go Out to Eat while I was sitting there eating in the restaurant. And sure enough, I pulled up the page, and there's the coupon for $5 off. When the bill comes, I show this to the waitress, and she says, okay, I'll take $5 off. So the iPhone saves you money. What else have we done? We went to see the Disney Pixar animated movie Bolt with the little dog that thinks he's a superhero. And our favorite part of it is the hamster, Rhino. We have a hamster, and it's so funny to see a movie with a hamster rolling around in a ball. I never even knew about this ball thing until we got our hamster. And then all of a sudden I saw it in the previews on the movie. There's this hamster running around in a ball. Have you seen this? If you don't have a hamster, run out and get one. And then get the plastic ball that they run in. It's just hilarious. You put the hamster down in this, you know, it's like a clear plastic ball. Seal it up. And just let them loose around the house. They run and run and run, and they're always running around, coming in my office, coming under the desk, running into my foot. It's a fun time. Our hamster's name is Zoe. We watched the TV series, the first episode of the TV series, Firefly, and we enjoyed that. Got it from Netflix. And I guess we're going to try to watch all the rest of the series. I saw the movie Serenity. And enjoyed the movie, but probably didn't really understand the story. So I'm hoping by the time we get through with the TV series, maybe we'll watch Serenity again and understand the story. One thing we have been doing a lot more recently is we've been playing a lot more ping pong. Got a ping pong table for the basement and been going down there every night. Maybe by spring and summertime, we'll have more interest in actually going outdoors than in playing tennis. A couple of other iPhone news. If you haven't got your iPhone, ask for Santa to get you one for Christmas. Here's one of the interesting applications I downloaded for the iPhone recently. It's called Wolfgang's Vault, or search for Concert Vault. And what this is, it's a direct link to a site that has a vault, an archive of live music performances. And you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember going to record stores. I remember going to record stores, actually buying a record album covered in, you know, in this cellophane paper. And you buy the album, you're driving home with it. There's no way you can, you know, plug it into the dashboard and listen to it. You have to wait till you get home to unwrap the cellophane wrapper, put the piece of vinyl down on your turntable and listen to the music. And there's a bit of excitement there as you're listening to the songs for the first time. So sometimes you buy an album, you know, without ever hearing the songs first. There was no preview mode available on the computer to be able to hear what the songs were. Well, that same thrill, that same excitement, I find, is now present in listening to these songs from Concert Vault. These are performances that are not cut to vinyl, as far as I know. Although, yeah, they probably are. I mean, if they're at the archives at Concert Vault, there's probably other ways to listen to them. But I went back and listened to an old Rolling Stones concert from like 1973, and it was great. It was a lot better than the current day Rolling Stones concerts. Went back and listened to a Linda Ronstadt concert. Now, I went to see Linda Ronstadt in Huntington, West Virginia, the fattest city in the United States, back in the late 70s. And this concert, I think, was from 1978, so it's pretty close to the same songs that she was doing at the time. And it was a lot of fun. It was like I had a recording of the concert that I went to way back when. Really enjoyable. So I encourage you to download Concert Vault for your iPhone and sign up. You can listen to these live shows for free. You just type in a name of a band that you might want to find. Tears for Fears, The Fix, Rolling Stones, The Who. All kinds of bands out there have live shows that you can listen to at Concert Vault. And speaking of gold coins on eBay, let's pull something out of the Madman Machine tool crib. Well, a couple of shows ago, the tool in the crib was this eBay gold thing. And of course, as soon as I mentioned it, it didn't appear to work anymore. I don't know if it's back up yet or not even. But I found another one. This one is at 24hourgold.com. And it is a page, let's see what they call it. They don't have a good title for it. It's a page that shows you the buy and sell auctions of gold and silver coins on eBay. It shows you what the current metal value is for, say, gold, like an ounce of gold. And then it shows you what current offers are on coins from eBay. And it has direct links then to some searches on eBay that you can get at those gold coins. For example, let's look at a 1 ounce gold coin, a 1 ounce American Eagle. That's a $50 American Eagle. It has 1 ounce of gold. Its metal value, according to this right now, is $766.39. The average price now on eBay is $949.50. It says that the premium over spot now is 23.9%. Of course, if you got the Microsoft cash back of $200, you'd get that gold coin not for $949, but for $749, which is under spot price, right? There's a link then over to Buy It Now on eBay, and you can click that link, and it'll take you directly to those items that match their search for 1 ounce American Eagle gold coins with a Buy It Now link. I like to click on that and then go sort that by price, and you try to have to skip past all the numismatic coins, you know, the coins that people are trying to sell because they have some sort of collectible value, and get down to the ones that are just basically selling an ounce of gold. And here's one for $9.75. Here's one for $9.50. A lot of these have free shipping. Here's one for $9.35. So that's the tool in the crib this time. The 24-hour gold eBay gold coin prices tool. Like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. And also, if you have an iPhone, there's another tool that just came out, and that's from Kitco. They have a gold ticker update. So you can, if you go into your iPhone and say download applications, you can search for the word Kitco, K-I-T-C-O, and download their application that lists out the current gold prices and give you charts and things like that. In the Learning Earnings segment, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors, we're going to ask and answer the question, have we really lost wealth? Learning Earning, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. Well, the stock market is down, as you might know, if you've been listening to this or any other investment show or reading the papers. You might realize that the stock market's been down a little bit this past year. And many people are asking, where did the money go? You know, there was a headline in the USA Today that read something like $2 trillion wiped out of retirement funds so far in 2008. And so you're asking, really? $2 trillion is wiped out? Lost? Where'd it go? Well, this is a fascinating notion. I mean, you wake up one day and suddenly money's gone, vanished. Like it's some ice cube that's melted on a hot street. Here one moment and gone the next. Well, as we'll see, the ice cube metaphor may be even better than it first appears. Stocks have melted. Do you listen to the NPR Planet Money podcast? It's actually one of the top podcasts at iTunes at the moment, one of the top 50 of all podcasts. And they've been recently trying to ask and answer the question, what is money? And even more recently, they asked the question, too, where did the money go? And to help visualize this loss of money, they acted out a little skit. They had three market participants. At the start of the skit, it was noted that among them, the sum total of money was $400. Monopoly money. Russ Roberts from Econ Talk was there, and he had $200. The host had $200, and the lady had zero, but she had a house. and it's a little green Monopoly house. So Russ decides he wants a house. He offered her $200 for her house, and she accepted. So Russ has the house, and she has $200. Some time passed, and then Russ wanted to sell his house. The host was the only one who made an offer on it, and it was for $100. Well, Russ took the offer, but was obviously unhappy about, quote, losing this $100. Now, at the end of this skit, the host owned the house and $100. The lady had $200, and Russ had $100. Now, if you added all that up, there was still $400 there. The sum total of money was the same, and it remained unchanged, although some of the market participants had varying emotions about their transactions. She was happy. The lady was happy to receive the $200 for her house because she had originally paid just $100 for it. But she said she still had to live somewhere and would now have to go and buy another house. Russ was obviously unhappy because he has $100 less than when he started and still no house. And the host of the show is probably the happiest because he has a nice house and still has $100 of his original $200 remaining. But with the net amount of money in the whole skit remaining the same, they didn't really ask the question, why did the house only get an offer of $100? Why not a $300 offer? Don't house prices continuously rise and never fall? It was a fun exercise to walk through, but it still left me somewhat unsatisfied. So let's try to figure that out. And instead of houses, let's talk about gold for a moment. I'm going to swap in gold instead of houses. And gold, of course, is different than houses. You can't live in gold. Gold is money, although it's ancient money. Gold would still be money today if governments would stop prohibiting it from being money. But consider these characteristics of what makes money money. It must be marketable and must be easily transportable. All right, you have to make sure that money, whatever you use as money, is relatively scarce. It has to be relatively imperishable, easy to store, easily divisible, and uniform in quality. And gold is the thing that best meets all of these characteristics, and it has been used as money by default through the ages. Now, ironically, the dollar, the world's reserve currency, doesn't meet all these characteristics. It misses the scarcity test. But it's probably pretty good in some of the other characteristics. I guess it's really good in the characteristics of, hey, we need more of it. Let's make some more. So let's go on to this example. Let's trade two things, dollars and gold. Now, it used to be that a dollar actually represented gold, or silver in particular, at a fixed amount. But sort of that standard was done away with in the 20th century. Today, we can trade one for the other at different amounts. So let's say you have dollars and I have a 1 ounce gold coin. You can make me an offer to trade some of your dollars for my coin, and I can accept or refuse. Now, if you offer me $200 for my 1 ounce gold coin, guess what? I'll refuse. If you offer me $2,000 for my 1 ounce gold coin, I will accept. Somewhere in between these two ranges, we can probably reach an agreement, or we may not. Now, the more people there are around that have gold coins and have dollars that want to trade, the more likely there'll be a chance that someone will accept someone else's offer. As an example, say your bid for my gold coin is $600, but Troy, he bids $800 for it. So you see that, and you might consider increasing your bid to $850 for my gold coin in light of his bid. But before you do, Bill next to me has a gold coin, and he accepts Troy's $800 bid for his coin. And you witness that, and you decide to limit your bid to me to $800 also. Why pay more, right? Or if you're really trying to game me, you might hold your bid at $600, thinking that no one else is around now that will bid something higher. This is the workings of the market. Bidding and asking is how we reach agreed upon prices. This is why stock prices are what they are. They're dynamic, and they change continuously. It's a mixture of people wanting to sell at the highest asking price and people wanting to buy at the lowest bid price. But they know they're all competing with each other, other sellers and other buyers, for all those same items, those same shares, those same ounces of gold. Competition. That's the heart of the market. It's the heart of the gold market, and the heart of the real estate market, and the heart of the stock market, and even the heart of the currency market. In the NPR skit, the host was able to buy the house from Russ for only $100 because there were no other offers higher, and Russ really wanted to sell. A motivated seller, they say. Now, perhaps he needed to move because of a job relocation or something. There are motivated sellers in all markets, just as there are motivated buyers in markets. Are there more motivated sellers than motivated buyers? If so, prices will fall as the bids dry up. Prices will fall as the number of offers rise and the amount asked for sinks. Are there more motivated buyers? Prices will rise as bidders compete. Prices will rise as owners hold tight. Presently in our global stock markets, our global real estate markets, and our global commodity markets, we have not just a boatload of motivated sellers, but a whole fleet of cruise ships full of motivated sellers. We've got banks, brokers, hedge funds rushing for the exits at the same time, needing to sell just to get the dollars to pay off debts and client redemptions. We even have investors motivated to sell simply because they see so many other motivated sellers selling. As naturally happens when motivated sellers outnumber motivated buyers, prices drop. You might call this an asking war, which is the opposite of a bidding war. Sellers lowering their asking prices in the face of other low asking prices. Asking prices for stocks go lower. Asking prices for houses go lower. Asking prices for copper go lower. But motivation in a particular market is only part of the story. We need to also consider motivation across markets. I may want to sell my house not because of physical reasons, like I have to move, but maybe for economic reasons. Perhaps I really want to trade my house wealth for stock wealth. I may prefer at the present time to rent a house and then hold on to 10,000 shares of an index fund. Now, I probably won't find an exact trade I'm looking for. That is, someone to offer me their 10,000 shares of an index fund for my house. So instead, I have to trade through money. I sell the house for dollars, not gold, and then sell the dollars for the index funds. But even in the face of these motivations, where it's a physical motivation or an economic motivation, the net amount of money in the system doesn't change. The buyer gets to keep a net amount that the seller might lose out on. So the host of the show and the NPR show has the $100 instead of Russ. When prices on things kept going up, did anyone ask, where did the money come from? Not likely. We don't care how we got it, yet we darn sure not want to know how we lost it. But both answers are the same. Where did it come from? Where did it go to? The net amount of money remains constant among the total pool of buyers and sellers. So now we know where the money went. It's still there. But not a satisfying answer to owners of stock market mutual funds in their 401k plans. Oh, great! Motivated sellers means any bids I seek for my shares will be lower if I were to try to sell today. So Penny's 401k plan may have a cost basis, let's say, of $100,000, and last year when she checked bids on her portfolio, it may have sold for nearly $300,000. But based upon recent offers, it may only receive bids for half that, $150,000. That seems like lost wealth. Is it? It depends. It might not be lost wealth. We need to look at what Penny would have wished to trade her shares of stock for. A house? Well, Penny's in luck, because houses that she liked that used to fetch $300,000 bids are now asking only $150,000. So Penny's 401k plan would buy the same amount of house, even though its dollar value has fallen in half. Similarly, Penny may have wished to use her 401k to travel, or to eat out, or to pay her gas bill. Dollar values for each of these things may have fallen, but their values may have stayed relatively close to the value of her stocks over that time. We're living in a world where bids for every asset are lower in comparison to bids for dollars. Many motivated sellers of stuff, many motivated buyers of dollars. So the problem is the thing that we're using as money itself is becoming more valuable. The banks, brokerages, and hedge funds that need to get dollars are not just motivated sellers of stocks and commodities, but they're motivated buyers of dollars. There are lots of motivated dollar buyers. Prices of dollars rise. Everything else seems more expensive compared to dollars as a result. But we, the investing public, owners of 401k plans, we're typically not motivated buyers of dollars. We're typically motivated buyers of the things that dollars buy. Food, travel, cars, shelter, heat, etc. When we trade one of these for the other, we may roughly expect the same item-for-item transaction this year as we did last year. It's the thing in the middle that's changed, the money. The demand for the dollar by banks, brokerages, and hedge funds has skewed the monetary valuations of things that we need to sell and things we want to buy, but in the end, our wealth remains largely unchanged, just like the amount of money remains unchanged among buyers and sellers. Back to the ice cube metaphor. Stocks have melted. Real estate has melted. Copper has melted. But just like a melting piece of ice, that water still exists. Couple other quickies before I let you go, class. The lazy portfolio SmackDown results for the end of November are in. Harry Brown portfolio is now minus 5% on the year. We've got 1 month to go. Scott Burns' couch potato portfolio down 22.9% through November 30th. And the MMM Smiler funds, the small cap, micro cap, international, large cap, emerging market, and real estate, are down 45.2% year to date. But Mudfud, the China Bear Fund, up 42%. Tex Williams up 29%. Cosmo up 3%. Quasimodo down 1%. And bringing up the rear, Pool and Bob down 52.6% on the year. Also, at the end of November, the worst one-year rolling period is now updated once again. You remember at the end of October, the worst rolling one-year period for the past 50 years is what we put in. Well, at the end of November, we even have a worse one-year rolling period, so be looking for that. And you remember earlier this year when I told you that a penny prior to 1982 made out of copper was worth 2 cents, and a nickel made out of nickel was worth 7 cents. Well, look now. Go to coinflation.com, and you'll see that a penny prior to 1982 is worth just slightly less than a penny now, 0.9 cents. A nickel is worth 2.3 cents. Wow. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Mad Money Machine. I do appreciate your feedback. Sent to me, email, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Call the voicemail line. Just type this into your phone, 206-734-4763. Give me a call and leave a voicemail message. They're fun. I might play it on the show. Or go to dropped.io/madmoneymachine and post anonymously any comment you might have about the Mad Money Machine show. I'll occasionally post stuff out at twitter.com/madmoneymachine. And even I post some bookmarks from time to time, delicious.com/madmoneymachine. So Mad Money Machine is everywhere. Hey, one other thing I'd like to encourage you to do. Go into the show notes of this show, show 138, and click the link there to subscribe to Index Funds Advisors podcast. They have a video podcast now of their quote of the week which I hope to be doing the voiceovers on at least. And check that out. Make sure you subscribe to that. Let's get that moved up the charts so that we can help out everybody else investing in index funds. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing where the wealth went to make a Mad Money machine. I'll see you next week. Visit IFA.com and take their risk capacity survey, especially if you haven't taken it in a long while, to see what you should be invested in at this time. Thanks for listening. Stay invested. See you next Friday.